When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
VoiceOver Coffee Shop, episode number 28.
Welcome to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop, where we share our morning with some of the finest names in voiceover. And now, here's your host, voice actor Andrew Morrison.
Hi there, my name is Andrew Morrison, and welcome to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop, where we start our day with some of the finest names in voiceover. If you'd like to know more about me, feel free to visit my personal website at www.andrewdmorrison.com. In this episode, we have coffee with my dear friend, J.P. Karliak. J.P. is an American voiceover artist, writer, solo artist, and a snazzy dresser, known for roles such as Wile E. Coyote, Tin Man in Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, and the title role in Boss Baby, just to name a few. In this episode, we talk about Queer Vox and Nerds Vote, auditioning in the LGBTQ community, how to decipher if a character is your identity's story to tell, and making positive change in the world as a voice actor. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here.
Good. It's good to have you. So how do you take your coffee?
I don't drink coffee.
You don't drink coffee. How do you get started in the morning then?
I'm a tea drinker, actually. I'm big on tea, usually green, specifically Genmaicha, but. I find that as I'm getting older, caffeine is starting to bother me, so I actually do a lot of decaffeinated stuff. But yeah, I've never been a coffee person. My partner, on the other hand, guzzles it by the gallon, but I'm not the coffee person.
Gotcha. So I know you you have history in theater, and you also did freshman recruiting for a while. What's kind of your story? How did you end up from Scranton, Pennsylvania to Los Angeles as a voiceover artist? How did that happen?
Practice. No. I always wanted to act. I always wanted to do theater and performance. I went to college at the Catholic University of America for 2 years in DC, loved the people that I met there, loved a lot of my experiences there, but it just wasn't offering the program that I was looking for. So I decided that I wanted to be either in New York or LA. After 2 years at Catholic, I ended up transferring out to LA, and I went to USC for 2 years. And my whole goal was, I kind of wanted to do the whole thing. I wanted to do on camera and I wanted to do theater. And despite always being a fan of cartoons, I was always under the impression, I can't do those unless I'm famous. Nobody's going to give me that work unless I have a bunch of credentials already.
Right.
It never even crossed my mind that it was really an option unless I already had stuff going for me. I just started pounding the pavement to try and make an on-camera career, but I had a bunch of friends who were studying animation and needed some voiceover. And so I was doing that, and it was getting really good results from their teachers and stuff. And I'm like, maybe there is something here. So while I was at USC, one of the professors there was Kelly Ward, who, in addition to being a musical theater genius and also was in the Grease movie, he also directs a lot of animation and has worked in animation for years. So people were telling me, oh, go talk to Kelly, go talk to Kelly. So I talked to him and he's like, all right, a few things. These are the people I want you to study with. And I sought them out and I studied with Ginny McSwain and I studied with Bob Bergen, who became my mentor. And yeah, and through Bob, I got an agent and that was it. The rest is history. And slowly over, you know, I was kind of pursuing both on camera and voiceover for a while, but you know, when you're working a day job and you only have so many dollars that you can invest, right. use to invest in your career, it slowly started becoming more and more voiceover and less on camera until my on camera manager was just like, what are we doing? And I'm like, I don't know. I gotta go. Bye. You know, and that was sort of it.
So what made you decide to want to start getting into the director's chair?
Well, I haven't really directed.
Well, you're the animation director for Voice LA, correct?
Oh, for Real Voice LA?
Yeah.
So okay, so I teach and I do okay. demos. I'm not like I haven't done any work there in terms of like you know, directing actual projects or anything.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not opposed to it. I'd be down for it, but I, you know, I have a lot of stuff going on right now that I'm kind of good, but right. we'll see, you know.
So speaking of all your stuff going on, what was the inspiration behind Nerds Vote and QueerVox? I know they're two completely different entities, but
well, I'll start with the senior organization. Nerds Vote started in 2018. It's the brainchild of fellow voiceover artist Courtney Taylor. Mm-hmm. She basically got the idea while having margaritas with Ashley Birch about, you know, wanting to do something, especially, yeah. you know, always being in the con space, but not really sure what to do. And then it just kind of, you know, struck her like lightning, like, oh my God, why don't we bring voter registration opportunities to conventions? And that's kind of where Nerds Vote started, was just, you know, liaising between different Comic-Cons around the country and voter registration organizations and trying to, you know, get them a table or get them a booth and get them situated, and also have the quote unquote notable nerds, our, you know, celebrity friends who are on site to promote, like, you know, when they're doing signings and everything, like, hey, everybody, by the way, go and check out this Nerds Vote table to make sure you get registered to vote if you're not already. And that was the plan, and it was going well. And then, of course, pandemic. So then we pivoted to this little show Between Two Nerds. And all of last year, we were just interviewing our fellow notable nerds, talking about how they were dealing with the pandemic and also why voting was important to them. And now, now that we're after that big election last year, we're pivoting again and trying some other new things. And we may even be getting on TikTok, God help me. So, you know. yeah, it's all about just finding the right balance of, you know, the bandwidth that we have available, but also getting the word out, especially in a period of time where everyone's like, oh my God, politics, I can't anymore. You know, we did that all last year. So, still trying to keep it interesting and fresh and, you know, keep people involved. And then QueerVox, mm-hmm. I just started this year, that was, that came out of just sort of the witnessing the growing number of roles that are available, that are a growing number of queer roles, but not necessarily an equal and opposite growing number of queer talent being booked in those roles, or any roles for that matter. It's nice that the representation is being seen on screen in our animated shows and in our interactive titles, but it would be nice if, you know, the people that were actually playing them fit the part. I decided to start this little training academy called QueerVox, which basically is it's a pay what you can training ground for aspiring and established queer voiceover people, prioritizing trans and non-binary and also BIPOC queer folks, since those are the most marginalized. And, you know, and just trying to get them ready to go into the voiceovers, into the industry, and also if they are already in the industry, to further showcase them and to highlight them and bring attention to them from casting directors and so forth, so that, you know, there is no like, I just couldn't find anybody. Like, here they are. There you go.
Right. So with a lot of casting calls, having those labels because there are certain stories that need to be told by particular people. A lot of times when casting calls come up, there's often confusion because there's male versus male identifying and female versus female identifying. And so how, when a casting call comes up and you see these labels that within the industry are relatively new, although I'm glad they're there, how do you kind of figure out if you should audition for it and if this is maybe your story to tell?
I mean, that is the question that we ask. And for every, it's going to be an individual decision for every person, you know. Because the one thing that we try to get away from at QueerVox is gatekeeping. Like, we don't want to set like the hard and fast lines. Like, for instance, if you're not using they them pronouns, then you can't shouldn't be auditioning for non-binary roles. Well,
Right.
that's not true for everybody, you know. There are, for instance, you know, I identify as genderqueer, but I don't use they them. It's just, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work for me. So,
Right.
but I still feel comfortable auditioning for non-binary roles. I, however, don't feel comfortable auditioning for trans roles because that isn't my story to tell. I can't speak to that. You know, so I think it does vary for each person. I do think that when I say it's, is it your story to tell? I don't mean is it my sister's story to tell? Like, oh, well, you know, my sister went through that, so I can
Right.
say, not necessarily. Because the truth of it is that I don't like to get into the litigation of whether do you or do you not have the talent to be, or the acting chops to be able to play a queer role if you don't identify that way, or a trans role if you don't identify that way. You know, I've seen plenty of movies and TV shows that have done a pretty good job of, you know, straight or cis people playing those roles. The problem is that I'm not, it's not just asking for that authenticity. It's also asking for if a company is bothering to tell a queer story, but they're not letting queer people tell that story, to play the parts in that story. And the people getting paid for that story are straight and cis people. They're making money off of the stories of queer folks who are marginalized and not able to sustain careers in this industry. And that's where it becomes problematic, is that you're benefiting off of our stories, but we're not allowed to earn wealth off of them. And that's where I have an issue. So as far to get back to your question, as far as how do you make those distinctions, I think a lot of it is a gut check. I think a lot of it is doing the homework of, you know, kind of, you know, certainly in the past year, we have all done the homework of, or hopefully done the homework of, you know, what certain terminology means in terms of race, and what our racial history in this country is, and you know, and learning what those inequalities and disparities are. In the same way, it's helpful to learn that as far as what's affecting the queer community, and learning like, you know, where your privilege might be or where it isn't, and you know, and see, and so that you can make an informed decision when those auditions come your way. Like, can I authentically bring something to this story? And I know that for some people, there's this fear that's like, oh my God, there's so many identities coming out of the woodwork, and how am I going to be able to play anything? Where am I going to get cast?
Right.
The nice thing is that there are so many. There's a dearth of content right now. There's never been more content than there is at this moment, and also, I didn't start my career in, you know, in established content. Like, I really didn't start going, things didn't really start turning for me until I was making my own content and inviting people to witness it. And then that started the ball rolling. So I encourage everybody, like, if the copy that you're getting is not your story to tell, tell your own. you know, and it doesn't have to be expensively. The nice thing is that you can kind of do it with an iPhone and, you know, and produce your own thing. You know, tell your own story and get that out there. And that may be the thing that propels you into other things. But I'm, you know, I don't want people to feel that by doing the right thing and allowing this authenticity movement to happen, that all of a sudden there's not going to be any work for the straight, right, cis, white, you know, folks. There will be.
So creating your own to be the change that you want to see in media.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, thank you for truncating that.
Right. So how do you kind of balance that with trying to be, say we take the example of a new flowering VO that's, mm-hmm, trying to navigate the world, because it's definitely a large learning curve when people first start out. So how do, from the get-go, do you start making strides towards those changes that you want to see?
I mean, I think, you know, this is a question that has actually come up in QueerVox and, mm-hmm, and in even in the classes I teach at Real Voice LA, is the idea of, how do I know what my brand is? How do I network? How do I put myself out there? And right, a lot of it has to do with, like, when I, you know, I also mentor some students at USC. And like, the advice that I have for college students is, before you figure out all of the, you know, what my type is and what all the roles I want to play and who are the people I'm targeting and what all the networks is, know who you are, who's in here, what's important to you, what are your values? Like, what are the things that you want to protest for or fight for? Or like, what are the things that upset you or that you want to see change in the world? What are the things that bring you joy? Focus on those first.
Because to put that into marketing terms, then you can create your unique value proposition.
Exactly. Perfect. Yeah. Because like, I can tell you, like, oh, you seem like you can easily play like the quirky, you know, office worker or something like that. And it's like, well, I mean, maybe, but so can a bajillion other people. Like, right, that's just a cookie cutter, you know, cutout, right, a cookie cutter like template. Mm-hmm. That doesn't necessarily describe your personal uniqueness. It just really only speaks of like, this is one particular character you can play, but certainly not the fullness of you. And I mean, you know, when I speak of creating my own content, like my, I wrote a solo show,
mm-hmm,
that called Donna Madonna, which was, mm-hmm, an autobiographical musical comedy about...
Didn't it win an award in New York, I believe?
I won a few awards in New York, actually. But thank you. I went to a few fringe festivals around the country and won some stuff. But the story... I wrote it because it's about my being adopted and eventually meeting my birth mother and sort of the nature versus nurture effect of that both of my mothers have had on my, you know, okay, psyche. And I wrote it as a love letter to both of them and how lucky I have felt to have a good relationship with both of them. I also recognize that, yes, I'm not going to just perform it just for the two of them in a living room. Like, I will invite other people to this, mm-hmm, but I never set out initially to be like, haha, this is my marketing tool. It was like, no, this is a passion project for me and I will share it with others as well. You know, in the same way, like whenever you hear like big time directors talk about, or big screenwriters talk about, you know, you write the thing or you direct the thing that feels passionate and most important to you. And you just hope that it resonates with other people. That's kind of the direction that I went in. And my thought was, worst comes to worst, the two of them will like it for what it is. And that's it. That, you know, done. At least I did that. I checked that box. But I was fortunate that, you know, a bunch of people liked it. And I invited industry to see it. And it developed some relationship with casting directors. And it made me not just a voice, not just a type. It made me a fully fleshed out human being. Now, I'm not saying everybody needs to write a full-on, you know, musical solo show, but like, right, you know, creating that thing or even getting involved in that cause. Like, you know, I have a friend who she invites some industry folks together, you know, maybe like four times a year to go down to the LA Women's Shelter downtown, and we cook a meal, and, you know, and we socialize, we chat, we do this thing, and it feels really good, and, you know, and it's not only creates that opportunity that we can all kibitz and everything, but it's also showing what her values are, and it expresses what she believes in, and makes people think of her like, oh, you know, is a good person, that one, you know. So it's that type of stuff, is focusing on the things, like you were saying, what was the word you used? Valuation?
Unique value proposition. That's the marketing terminology for, here's what I have to offer that other people in the industry don't have.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that raises another question for me, because outside of, I mean, you create a lot of very unique content, and you're casted for a lot of very unique roles, but you've also been casted for a lot of roles that are kind of your rendition of roles that have already been established.
Right.
So in that, how on the mic, like when you're sending out that audition, how do you kind of stand out from the remainder of the crowd? Like, how do you say I'm the best fit for this role, even though it's something that's already been established, but at the same time, I'm able to put my own personal twist on it?
Sure. I mean, the sound alike gig it varies from project to project.
Right.
Sometimes all they're looking for is they just want the dead on, and, right, you know, with acting, like they certainly want to know that you can perform.
Right.
You know, the thing that I tell my students a lot is, if you're inhabiting that other character, you have to be able to do anything in that character. You know, we see a lot of those YouTube videos of the impressionists who just go down the line doing the catchphrases of all of these characters. Well, goody, you can say what's up, Doc, but can you do Bugs Bunny reading the phone book? Can you do Bugs Bunny singing? Can you do Bugs Bunny, like, getting hit in the head? Like, you know, there's all of those nuances that you've got to be able to capture with the character. So that's part of it. You know, I have a bit of a music background, so a lot of my tapping into a character is figuring out what the melody of their speech is,
mm-hmm,
and seeing if I can emulate that. And also just trying to find that play. I took in college that was just like a random elective that, you know, was phonology, you know. And so I learned like placement of, like, you know, the different resonation parts of your, which is it was a course that I was like, eh. But I mean, in retrospect, I'm like, oh, it was one of the best courses I could have taken, and I highly recommend it. Even just getting a book about, you know, phonology or linguistics or, you know, just speech in general. It's so great to be able to know where those placements are, so you can kind of think, like, where can I focus that? Like, it's, you know, to know that, you know, if you're doing like a Marvin voice, that it resonates from back here, as opposed to, you know, a more nasal voice, that it resonates from up here, like to be able to make those placements so that when I'm hearing like Alec Baldwin's voice, you know, and knowing where that placement is as I hear it. So pairing that with the melody of his voice, you know, you can kind of approximate it. Or, as is often the case when I get sound like roles, I'm like, I can't do this one. All right, thanks, pass, bye, you know.
Right.
And that's okay. Like, you know, like there are some that I'm like, I'm close, so I'll try it. But then there's some that it's like, it's not going to happen.
Right.
Steve Carell. Can't do Steve Carell. I've tried. I can't. I came very close to some Will Ferrell stuff a couple times. Even though I'm like, ooh, it's close, but not quite it. As a matter of fact, Alec Baldwin, I don't think I do a particularly great Alec Baldwin. I think that I'm more doing Will Arnett doing Alec Baldwin for Boss Baby.
And see, that's what I was kind of getting at, is that you put, even in these established roles, you're adding something extra to it, and just something that's you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, especially like if we think of Wile E. Coyote,
mm-hmm,
when they were casting the new Looney Tunes, you know, they were looking for pretty much dead on for the more recognizable voices. So like Bugs, Daffy, Yosemite Sam, they all needed to be pretty spot on.
Right.
But because a lot of people don't remember what Wiley sounds like, or they have a vague idea, they're like, oh yeah, like super geniusy thing, right? I was given a little more freedom to play. And I think it's because the original voice director of the new Looney Tunes was Charlie Adler. And, you know, I love Charlie. I love Charlie's work. He directed the first animated show that I ever animated project I ever worked on. And I knew the real zany, real like over the top energy that he looks for. And I was like, all right, I'm pushing this Wiley to 11. Like, you know, so I went, I don't think I consciously thought of this, but somebody brought it to my attention later, because I think this is just sort of an area that I go to. But I took my best, like, Kelsey Grammer, and just went, you know, pushed it all the way. I did listen to Mel, you know, but that's sort of what I got from it, is like, you know, because Mel's, you know, listening to his is pretty laid back. Like, you know, he doesn't go overly extra with Wiley, but I did, you know, I just went like megalomaniac. So I think it's, as I said, it varies project to project, and really kind of gauging how much freedom do I have with this. And especially if you can send in two takes for an audition, sometimes it's sending them exactly what they've asked for. And then, as you said, in that B take, putting your own spin on it a little bit and being like, do you want a little special sauce? You know, it varies.
So speaking of that freedom, what do you do outside of the booth? How do you unwind? Like, what does JP, I mean, voiceover is wonderful. It's amazing. But like, what other indulgences do you have?
Good. Unwind is such a triggering word, because it feels like we barely have the chance to do that.
Right.
But what takes up the rest of my time? Well, I mean, Queer Vox has been, you know, a big chunk at the moment. Also, I recently got engaged, so we're in the middle of planning a wedding.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so that's a thing. We're also getting a dog. There's a lot of life-changing stuff that we're working
on.
What kind?
Yeah, what kind of dog?
We're going to look at one this weekend, a poodle mix, which it's kind of, I mean, whether we get this one or not, kind of any dog we end up getting is probably going to be some type of poodle mix, because my partner has allergies. Mm-hmm. That's a thought. We're kind of looking for, we have a friend who we call our dog Yenta. Mm-hmm. And she's helping us match with the right dog. And the way she when we told her kind of what we were looking for, the way she described it was, we're looking for a go-anywhere dog. Just like, oh, yeah. Like one that's like, hey, buddy, you want to hop in the car? Cool, we're going to go for a ride. Hey, buddy, you want to go for a hike? Cool, we're going to go for a hike. You know, like, just like a dog that's like, sure, yeah, whatever. So that's sort of what we're in the market for. But it's been busy. We traveled a little bit earlier this year. We do like to travel when traveling is safe and okay.
Right.
And that's a lot of it. I mean, you know, I like to go to movies, concerts, stuff like that, when those are
right.
available to do. It's mostly just binging TV, lots of TV, but yeah.
So if you were to go back to, like, from right now, you were to just write yourself a letter, and that letter were to go back to theater school you, what would that letter say?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I'm going back.
Dear JP, all caps, calm down. I think there's a lot of stuff that I have stressed about that I don't need to. There's a lot of people's opinions that I have cared about that don't really matter. And a lot of people's opinions that do matter, like the people that are close to me, that I maybe should have given a little more weight, including my own. I think I would have told myself to not be afraid of my queerness. I think, you know, I'm in that, I'm a Xennial, the cuspy Gen X millennial generation, you know, that grew up in a period where, you know, LGBT issues and rights were starting to be a thing, like during the 90s, Ellen came out, we had Will and Grace, like, you know, all that stuff was happening. But at the same time, there was still a lot of homophobia and repression. And, you know, there still kind of is. So I think there was a lot of fear and a lot of hesitation that I personally had that I wish that I could have just thrown off. Yeah. And I think, since you specifically mentioned theater school me, I think the other thing I would have said is all of this stuff about the method and Strasberg and, you know, Meisner and all of that, it's going to work for some people and you're not one of them. Because I think for me, the schools of acting that involve digging into your own personal trauma and ripping it back up, that can be real damaging. And unless you've got your like really steel skin where you're like, no, I'm perfectly comfy with dredging all that up, it can be really hard. And there certainly, especially if it's under the tutelage of acting teachers that don't know what the hell they're doing. So yeah, I'm not talking about the USC ones, but people I subsequently studied with, you know, I think I would have advised myself to go more towards the Laurence Olivier version of just acting as opposed to, you know, going through severe psychotherapy.
Gotcha. Well, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it.
This was fun. God, this flew by.
I really hope you enjoyed listening to JP talk about how he went from a traditional theater to finding a home behind the microphone and using his newfound freedom to make positive changes that will change the industry as we know it. If you'd like to know more about JP, you can visit him at jpkarliak.com. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop. For more information on guests, new episodes, and more, be sure to visit www.vocoffeeshop.com.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.